We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
4 seconds to go. Pittsburgh off the bench and on its way back to Steeltown. A 4-1 winner tonight.
Joe Beninati calling the final few seconds of a rough loss, a bad loss for the Caps last night at home. A fourth straight defeat. They're in Carolina tonight, big underdog against the Hurricanes. The Caps have gone in just a few days from an odds-on favorite to make the playoffs to now a slight favorite to miss the postseason. They've got 7 games left, probably need 4 wins, 8 to 9 points in total may be necessary. Ovechkin scored last night. That was the good news. The bad news is it was the only goal of the night for the home team. The show's presenting sponsor, as always, is Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. If you've been thinking about new windows, mention my name for a free in-home, no-obligation estimate. Logan Paulson on the show today. You guys love it when Logan is on. We'll talk draft. We'll talk quarterbacks, of course. He'll break down the 4 quarterbacks after Caleb Williams. So plenty on Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, and Michael Penix Jr. as well. He'll also tell you who he would pick if he were the GM on the clock for Washington at number 2. You're also on the show coming up here in the first segment going to hear a short part of my radio interview today with Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner, one of my all-time favorite quarterbacks. Who does he think Washington should take and why? That's coming up in the opening segment of the show. I'll have a Final Four smell test pick for tomorrow's men's games coming up. As well, and I will mention something about Caitlin Clark tonight in the second of the 2 women's semifinal games, which I will definitely be watching tonight. Certainly the UConn-Iowa game. Rate us and review us, especially on Apple and Spotify, if you get a chance. Also, follow us and subscribe to the podcast. That's helpful as well. You can follow us on your iPhone. First, you click on that purple podcast icon, find the show, just search for the show, and then there's a button at the top that has a plus sign and the word follow. So just click that. On Spotify, there's a follow sign on the upper left-hand portion of the screen. So just hit the follow button there. Doing that is a big help for us. This from Always Burgundy and Gold. This was a review. He gave us 5 stars. Thank you very much on Apple. Kevin, I listened to the Adam Schefter podcast that you and Tom talked about yesterday. I thought his mention of not spoiling anything was actually very revealing. He knows something. He wanted to move on to New England as if Williams to Chicago and Daniels to Washington was a done deal. I think you agree, but I was surprised you didn't make a bigger deal of it. Love the show. Love when Tommy's on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Yeah, we didn't make that big of a deal about it yesterday. I think you're right. We didn't make that big of a deal out of it. I'm going to play it for you because I read the quotes from Adam Schefter yesterday from his podcast. But this was him on the podcast the other day talking about the first three picks of the draft. And much of it is on Washington at number two. And I think his belief or his lean that they'll take Jaden Daniels. You listen to it and decide for yourself.
What is new in Draftland this week?
Well, here's where I think we start, Daniel. We start at the top, and we know that the Bears have traded Justin Fields, and we'll continue to talk about the Bears. But I think we could just pencil Caleb Williams into number one and slot him in there. I know there's been some talk about whether or not he'd be interested in going to Chicago. I don't think that's going to be an issue. I think the Bears want him, and he's good with the Bears, and they're going to go on and form that relationship, which brings us to Washington. I know we're not supposed to spoil picks. We'll see how the Commanders decide to move forward with the number two overall selection. But a little over a few weeks out, to me, I think the signs continue to point to Jaden Daniels being the second overall pick at number two. Seems like he's popular in the scouting community. Seems like he would bring a lot of the attributes that the Commanders would like. I think Jaden Daniels would have a high level of interest in the Las Vegas Raiders, and the Las Vegas Raiders would have a high level of interest in Jaden Daniels, but there's one problem. The Commanders have the second pick, and I think Jaden Daniels is going to be somebody that really appeals to them, as he would a lot of teams, as talented as he is, and it's hard for me today, to see Jaden Daniels sliding much past pick number two. So let's pencil him in there. And I know we're not supposed to reveal the picks in advance. We don't know what the picks will be.
Right.
But again, we'll see how the shakes out. I think that's how it's stacking up a few weeks out. Caleb Williams one, Jaden Daniels two, and then the New England Patriots would be on the clock at number three with the possibility of taking Drake May at number three in New England.
So that was Adam Schefter from his podcast yesterday. And we did, Tommy and I, talk about the, I don't know if it was weird, but I thought it was interesting that he said on two different occasions, I know we're not supposed to spoil the pick. I know we're not supposed to reveal what the picks will be. When he says he's not supposed to do that, is that ESPN telling him, because the draft show is such a big deal, not to actually report what he knows? Or is it that he really just has a strong hunch? Maybe it's based on some information and he's not going to report it unless he knows it for sure. And things change between now and the draft. Like, he could report it now and it could be true, but it could change between now and April 25th, 3 weeks from tonight. I don't know what that was about. I thought that was a little bit strange, especially given that he is the number one NFL reporter on the planet, and he breaks more stories than anybody else. So to suggest that he's not supposed to spoil it or reveal it if he knows it, I think is weird, or certainly interesting. Denton, my producer, said on radio yesterday that there was some pushback from ESPN on Wojo, on Adrian Wojnarowski, because he was reporting for various drafts picks that he knew teams were making before they made it, and they didn't want him to actually report it as fact. He could report it as, what I'm hearing is that, you know, the Atlanta Hawks or the, you know, Denver Nuggets will select this player. I don't know. The NFL draft is different. Nobody's tuning away from the NBA draft if we know who the first two or three picks are heading in. And things do change in the NFL between, you know, especially now and 3 weeks from now. I don't know. As far as whether or not I believe he knows something, honestly, I think it's just a strong hunch. I think he talks to a lot of people, as he mentions, in the scouting community, that the indications are this in the scouting community that Daniels is the second best player. Washington has the number two pick. And I think he's relying more on that than maybe information from Washington. I don't know that Washington has come to a conclusion at this point. We still don't have the top 30 visits in, and a lot can change between now and then. And by the way, I think Adam Schefter recognizes that even if, let's just say, an Adam Peters has indicated to Adam Schefter kind of off the record and not for, you know, the specific, you know, purpose of reporting it, that Peters is infatuated or really likes Jaden Daniels. I think Schefter's been around long enough to know that things are still out there that have to take place, like top 30 visits. And things could change after they get in the classroom with a Jaden Daniels or in the classroom with a J.J. McCarthy who blows them away. So I think it's more of just a heavy hunch that Daniels is the second best player, second best quarterback in the draft, and Washington's got number two. I actually think an interesting part of Adam's answer is him indicating that the Raiders and even Jaden Daniels would love a fit together. You know, Jaden Daniels has played in warm weather climates, you know, Arizona State, Baton Rouge in the fall. Does he want to play in Washington or New England outside in cold weather for, you know, at least a month of the season? Or would he rather be an indoor quarterback in Las Vegas? Denver would be cold. Minnesota would be an indoor team if they were to trade up. But like Adam says, it's not his choice. It's not the way it works. You know, Washington's not going to trade Jaden Daniels to Vegas because Antonio Pierce is in love with him. And actually, Jaden Daniels would prefer to play in Las Vegas. The other thing that I wanted to play for you was I had Kurt Warner on the radio show today, the Hall of Famer. I would urge you to listen to the whole thing. He was great. We talked actually a lot about his career, specifically in Arizona and towards the end of his career. But I wanted to play the part where he tells me on the show today who he thinks Washington should take and why. Here's what he said. Washington's on the clock. Caleb Williams goes one to Chicago. Who do you think they should take and why?
Man, it's a great question. You know, I don't consider myself a draft expert because I believe there's such a process between going from college football to pro football. And, you know, all of these guys that are in the draft have to get better at the NFL level if they're going to be great at the NFL level. Like, there's nobody that I look at and say it's a finished product, or a guy like an Andrew Luck that I go, okay, this guy can come right in and he's a pro and he's going to roll. I think all these guys have some work to do. Jaden Daniels, I would say, to me, had the best tape from last year. And not a real surprise, winning the Heisman Trophy and everything, but he had the best tape. He was the most consistent. He had games that you're just like, wow. I mean, that was a great football game that he played. My question with him is just, he's only done it the 1 year. Now, that doesn't mean that's not who he's going to be the rest of his career, but that was such a breakout, incredible year that I just sit back and go, okay, is that who I get? You know, is that, you know, what he's going to be at the next level? Or was that just something that came together and, you know, his norm is a step back from that? And so I think that's the question you have to ask with Jaden Daniels.
Well, what do you think the answer is to that?
Yeah, again, I it's hard to say. Like, we saw Joe Burrow do that, right? He had the one great year, and he is that guy. So I want to believe that Jaden Daniels just kind of came into his own, figured out who he was, the whole game came together, and we're going to get that at the next level. So I want to believe that. You know, I think the other thing is just the stature of him, you know, is, you know, running around, moving, even though he's more of a pocket passer and then, you know, runs when he has to, you know, can you withstand the pounding week in and week out at the NFL level? But on tape, I would say that would be my choice, that I would go with Jaden Daniels. Just, and again, I don't sit down in a room with them. I don't get to talk to him from that capacity. But on tape, I thought he had the best tape from last year that would excite me enough to go, geez, if I can't pass that guy. You know, I got to at least see if this is the guy he is for his career. Whereas Drake May, I understand why there's an allure there. And, you know, you see some incredible throws and you love the body type. And, you know, and he had a great, you know, 2 years ago, 22, not as good this last year. I just thought there was a number of technical flaws in his game this year and even some last year that just make me pause. Because if you're not technically sound, I don't care what level you're playing at, you're going to miss and you're going to have issues and you're going to have, you know, times where you miss layups. And you can't miss layups at the NFL level. You have to be able to make those things most of the time. And so you got to be ready. You got to play fast, and you got to have technique. Yeah, is that something you can clean up? I think Josh Allen's a great example of, as he's cleaned up his technique, he's become one of the, you know, best quarterbacks our league, you know, has seen. And so it can be corrected. It's just, to me, when you see it as much as I saw it on tape, it worries me that if I get that guy and I can't get it corrected and we can't tighten that up, you know, I'm going to have an inconsistent quarterback, you know, year in and year out, and you can't win there. And so that's why I think if I'm picking, and I've got to make that choice based on what I saw on tape this past year, I'm going to go Jaden Daniels.
You can listen to Kurt Warner with me in its entirety by going to theteam980.com or downloading the Odyssey app. He was on with me today for about 25, 26 minutes. He was really good. He was very generous with his time. Those of you that remember from way back in the day, if you've been listening to me for a long time, know that I was a big Kurt Warner fan. There were some debates back then about, is he or isn't he a Hall of Famer? And I thought those were laughable debates. I thought he was an easy lock Hall of Famer. And he made it, I think, on the second ballot, the second year of eligibility. Maybe it was the third year of eligibility. I'm forgetting right now. But Kurt Warner had an incredible Hall of Fame career. And I just loved the way he played. You know, he was a true pocket passer. He had that super quick release. He was really smart and really clutch. I mean, he elevated that Arizona team to a Super Bowl where they almost won. Santonio Holmes making that great catch from Ben Roethlisberger beat him. If not, he'd have two Super Bowl trophies and two Super Bowl MVPs as well. He was outstanding in that Super Bowl loss to Pittsburgh. But anyway, so he said a couple things that I want to comment on. He likes Daniels, obviously, and that would be the guy. And he said, just watch the tape. I mean, and we've talked about that before. If you are looking to try to get really prepared for the draft and have a real opinion based on, you know, watching a lot of these guys and a lot of their games, it's hard not to watch Jaden Daniels play college football last year and walk away thinking anything other than, wow, was he a spectacular college football quarterback. Now, whether or not it translates to the NFL level, those are the things that, you know, people with much greater expertise, guys like Kurt Warner, are better at describing. He did say something that I disagree with, though, and that is he didn't have just one good season at LSU. And I've heard a lot of people say, you know, well, there's just the one good season. It was a great season. It was a Heisman Trophy season. Nah, he had more than just one good season. Look, make no mistake, 2023 was a great season, one of the best we've ever seen by a quarterback at the college level. There's no doubt about that. I mean, this is a guy that threw for 3,812 yards, 40 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and rushed for 1,134 yards and another 10 touchdowns. He accounted for 50 touchdowns and, you know, 5,000 yards of offense. But in 2022, his first year in Baton Rouge, he threw for 2,913 yards, rushed for 885 yards, threw 17 touchdowns to just three picks and rushed for 11 touchdowns. I watched a lot of those games. Go look how clutch he was, how clutch he played against Alabama in the 32-31 overtime win in Death Valley. He was tremendous against Ole Miss and Florida that year. He also had a really good freshman year at Arizona State, where he threw for nearly 3,000 yards as a true freshman, 17 touchdowns, two picks in that particular season, and had a big game in a game that was crucial for Oregon that year in 2019. Oregon was right there in the midst of potentially getting a playoff bid, and they lost in Tempe 31-28 to Jaden Daniels late in the season. Daniels threw for over 400 yards in the game as a freshman, three touchdowns, no picks in an upset win over Oregon. So to suggest that he's had just one good season is inaccurate. If you want to say he's only had one all-time Heisman Trophy winning season, that's true. But he was pretty good in 2022 and pretty good as a freshman at Arizona State. Anytime you watch this dude play at Arizona State or at LSU, you realized he could play. But he was at a level last year that was, unprecedented for him. But I just want to make sure people understand this isn't a guy that just came out like Joe Burrow did and had one really good season. That's just not the case. I thought his conversation about Drake May really, told you what he thought about May. You know, he likes May, but the technical flaws that he talked about make him, what he said, pause. You know, the footwork, the mechanics, the can't-miss layups, the easy throws he was referring to. You can't miss those throws at the NFL, and he missed them at the college level. But he also said it can be corrected like Josh Allen did. But he said, I saw a lot of it on tape, the missed throws, the missed layups, and that concerns him. And so that's why you could hear him lean Jaden Daniels over Drake May. Like, to me, I know he likes Daniels, but I think for the most part, he likes Daniels more than May because he's concerned more about May. So, interesting from Kurt Warner, you're going to hear Logan Paulson coming up, and Logan Paulson, I think, has a completely different opinion. And that gets to the conversation that we had yesterday. There are just so many different opinions on all of these quarterbacks. And from very qualified people, you'll hear them say about the same player, the guy is not very poised in the pocket. And the other guy says, oh my God, he's got the most poise in the pocket of anybody in the draft. That's what's been strange, the variance of the descriptions of the quarterback's play, not the variance of how these quarterbacks are getting mocked, in mock drafts. It's just the differing of opinion on what they're watching in terms of what a quarterback's true flaws are and true strengths are. We will get to Logan Paulson coming up here shortly and talk a lot about the quarterbacks. I've got a smell test pick on one of the two Final Four games tomorrow night coming up here in a moment. But first, I want to tell you about Prize Picks. It's an app that I downloaded recently. If you're a daily fantasy sports player, this is the easiest and the most exciting way to play DFS. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America, and it's different DFS. It's not you battling thousands of other players, including guys who are super sharp. It's just you picking more than or less than on two to as many as six players, their stat projections with odds. As an example, tonight, women's Final Four, game two, I will be watching Iowa and UConn. When you download the Prize Picks apps, you're given all of these different, player stat projections that you can go more than or less than. I've picked two tonight on Caitlin Clark. Point total for Caitlin Clark tonight, 33.5 points. I've gone less than 33.5 points. There is contrarian Sheehan at work. Everybody's on more, I would imagine. Caitlin Clark's three-pointers made is 6. I'm going less on Caitlin Clark's three-pointers made. Very much anti-public contrarian for me. This is a two-player stat projection. I'm going less than on both of them for Caitlin Clark. If I make and hit both of them, it pays 3-1. So on a $20 bet, it pays $60. On a $100 bet, it pays $300, etc. Download the Prize Picks app today. It's not just women's college hoops. Trust me, they got all the NBA games, all of the player stat projections for every NBA game and every Final Four game tomorrow. So download the app today. Use my code Sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's downloading the app, the Prize Picks app today. Use my code Sheehan for a first deposit match of up to $100. All right, let's talk men's Final Four tomorrow night in Arizona, and then I'll give you a smell test to finish up this opening segment. I like both favorites tomorrow night. I'll give you which of the two favorites is the smell test pick in a moment. I like UConn over Alabama. I like Purdue over NC State. That would be one hell of a final. UConn going for back-to-back titles. Look, a year ago, I mean, we had no idea what was coming with UConn and Danny Hurley. They lost 5 of their top 8 scorers off the national championship team last year. And although that Final Four last year, by the time they got to it, considering the other teams that were in it, people certainly thought UConn could win the national championship, but you didn't think that before the tournament started last year. The margin of victory was outrageous last year. It's once again all double-digit wins this year. I mean, they are 2 convincing wins away from being called one of the great 2-year back-to-back champions of all time. And that's not an exaggeration given the margin of victory. If they blow out Alabama and then were to blow out Purdue on Monday night, I mean, what would we be saying about this UConn team? I think the UNLV teams of 90 and 91 were the best college basketball teams of my lifetime, but they didn't win back-to-back. They lost in the semis in 91 as an undefeated team to Duke. And then Duke went on to win their first title and then backed that up the following year. But imagine Monday night you get UConn going for back-to-back against Purdue and Zach Edey, who, by the way, wrapped up back-to-back Associated Player of the Year awards yesterday, becoming the first back-to-back winner since Ralph Sampson did it. Sampson won 3 in a row at Virginia, 81-83. You know, when we've talked about college big men before, we've had that conversation here recently with Zach Edey. Ralph Sampson's college career at Virginia was incredible. A 3-time National Player of the Year. Now, he did not win a national championship and only went to 1 Final Four where they lost to Carolina in the semifinals. They were close to getting back to 1 his senior year, but NC State knocked him off in 83 and went on to pull off one of the biggest shockers in NCAA history, beating Houston, a very heavily favored Houston, in the final. I just don't think Alabama and NC State have enough to pull off upsets. I think if you told me one of the two big favorites, and UConn's a 12-point favorite and Purdue's a 9-point favorite, if one of the two lost, I would actually say it was UConn, but that gives you kind of a hint as to where I'm going with my smell test pick. Just because Alabama's got tremendous athletic ability, athletes to match UConn. I think the big problem with Bama is A, they don't guard very well. B, they will rely and need a bunch of threes, and I think UConn will do a great job of running them off that three-point line. Now, it doesn't mean when they get run off that three-point line that penetration can't end in a lob dunk or a kick out to somebody else after a couple of drives and kickouts. But they're going to have to make – I mean, they made 16 in their Elite Eight win over Clemson in a game that was very competitive. By the way, a game in which Clemson missed 8 free throws, a couple of front ends of 1-and-1s. They did not shoot the 3 well against Bama, despite having a lot of open looks. Open looks that I just don't see UConn missing as many. I think that's as much of an issue as the three-point shooting and being run off that three-point line by a team that has a much better ability defensively, I think, to do that. I just don't see Bama being able to stop UConn. Alabama is just not a very good defensive team. You know, they won a game earlier in this tournament beating Grand Canyon 72-61. Grand Canyon in that game missed 14 free throws. They were 23 of 37 in the game, and they were 2 for 20 from behind the arc, and they were a good three-point shooting team going in. So Bama got a little bit lucky in that game. Not that they would have lost the game. I think they got a little bit lucky with P.J. Hall fouling out in the Clemson game. I just think UConn's a better team. Alabama's not a great defensive team. They'd have to be lights out, probably from deep, where maybe they're not getting pushed off that line enough. Sears is capable. They've got capable shooters. They're a very athletic team. I just ultimately don't see it being good enough against the best team in the tournament. In the other game, I think it's going to be really hard for NC State to guard Purdue. I love DJ Burns Jr. He's been the story of the tournament. He's 6'9". Zach Edey has, 5 to 6 inches on him. He doesn't have much lift. DJ Burns doesn't. So they're going to have to probably double down on Edey. And Edey's such a good passer. And, unlike last year, he's got veteran point guards now. I mean, they're sophomores, but Lawyer and Smith can knock down those shots. Jones can knock down those shots. Edey's a good passer. He's a good passer out to the perimeter. He's also a good post-to-post passer. I don't think NC State's got the depth. I don't think they've got the ability to double him all night long. You know that Purdue will get to the free throw line because Edey gets fouled. And even when he gets breathed on, they seem to call it. Look, he gets fouled a lot too. I don't see NC State being able to get it done. And that is my smell test pick for tomorrow night. I like Purdue -9. The NC State team right now is the biggest liability that Vegas has with respect to winning the tournament, and the number of people who have played NC State as a long shot before the tournament, but even more so as the tournament's gone on, they've picked up more NC State winning it all bets, and that's their biggest liability. So they really want to see NC State eliminated from this tournament. The house does, the books do, but they've got a lot of liability in this game. The public's all over NC State, thinking that number's too big. So I will lay the 9 and take Purdue as a smell test pick to try to get back to 500. I'm a game below 500. Again, I'm lucky to be only a game under 500 with how much the public has had its way with sports books during this tournament. All right, so smell test pick officially Purdue -9. I like Purdue and UConn to meet each other in Monday night's final. I hope we get that final. I think that would be a fun final to see. I think the look-ahead line is UConn as a 5.5 or 6-point favorite over Purdue. I think I saw that the other day. Logan Paulson next, right after these words, from a few of our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
This segment of the show brought to you by Window Nation. Window Nation's got a great deal going on right now. Buy two, get two free with no limit, plus no payments and no interest for 24 months. I've been working with Window Nation for a long time now. It works out when people choose Window Nation. All I'm asking you to do, if you've been thinking about new windows, is call them or go to windownation.com and just get an estimate. It's free. There's no obligation. They're not going to pressure you. 866-90-NATION or windownation.com. They've got the most experienced team from sales to install teams. Their average installer averages 10 years of experience. They'll be in and out of your home in one day. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com, just for an estimate. You can shop it all you want. You can decide not to do anything right now, but at least give them the first shot to give you an estimate if you've been thinking about new windows. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. All right, jumping on with me right now is Logan Paulson, one of your favorites, one of my favorites as well. Logan's doing a lot of work with the Commanders and Commanders TV on YouTube, is involved in so many of the shows. They do such a great job. And Logan's analysis of this team and really what we're going to talk about today, I'm most interested in, is the draft, which we are 3 weeks away from knowing who Washington selected in the first round. And that's where I want to start. You know, I want you to save, if you don't mind, what you think they should do and what you think they'll do for the end. But I want to go through each one of these quarterbacks and get your thoughts on them. Let's start with post-Caleb Williams and assume that Caleb Williams is going number one to Chicago and Washington's on the clock at number two. Let's start with the one that's probably the longest shot of going number two, and probably not even, there's probably not even odds on him going number two. But I am curious to what you think after watching tape and evaluating Michael Penix Jr.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a little bit of a surprise. Yeah, Michael Penix Jr. is a really interesting eval for me personally, because I think he's a guy that, I don't know if he throws the ball the best in the class, but he's definitely close. Like, he has a tremendous arm. Like, his ability to, like, you know, he's throwing these deep balls down the field to Roma Dunze and Jalen Polk, and all three of those receivers there are pretty fantastic. And it just has zero arc, man. It looks like prime Aaron Rodgers throws, you know, like laser beam darts. And there's something very valuable about that. And I also think, like, his ability to kind of run that vertical pass tree from a quarterback standpoint is really impressive. You know, like the way he throws posts, the way he throws goes. Deep digs, not so much. He doesn't throw the football over the middle field that great, but that wasn't really what he was asked to do there. at UW. I think he's got a decent feel for the pocket. He's got kind of a long windup to his throw, which gives me some concern. But, you know, I heard this comp the other day, and I think it's pretty on the nose. It's like he's like Joe Flacco, and maybe he's a little bit faster. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's a good quarterback, got a good feel. There are some issues in terms of his footwork that gets a little dicey, partially because his arm is so strong. But a guy that I think if he's in the right system and you let him grow and let him marinate for a little bit, could become a good starting quarterback in the NFL just because that arm talent and the ball placement is pretty high level.
I started with him because we'll get to, you know, the three guys that are being most talked about for number two overall, Daniels, May, and I guess to a lesser degree, McCarthy here in a moment. But I have felt that Penix Jr. is rising a little bit in the minds of a lot of the evaluators. I mean, who the hell knows what anybody really knows? But one of the things that I've commented on, and I'm curious as to your opinion, I think it's very obvious in watching him that he processes very quickly. Like, he really kind of understands pre-snap, post-snap, where the ball's going. It gets out. It gets out accurately. His deep ball is fun to watch. But what I saw at Washington, and I know they had a great offensive line. They've got two NFL receivers. They had a really good running back in Dylan Johnson when he was healthy. But what did you see from that standpoint, and why do you think he's rising, if indeed that's actually happening?
Yeah, I don't know if he's actually rising, because I think it's like when you look at those top, what is that, six guys, I think it's actually pretty close. It's closer than people want to say. I think Caleb Williams, like you said, is kind of in the definitive tier, the next three guys. And I think, you know, Bo Nix and Michael Penix, I don't think are too far off. I think there's obviously things about their game that make you say, oh, you know, like, this is why they're lower on my list than everybody else. But I think with Penix, it's, I think people are getting him to watch him throw the football a little bit. You know, they're getting to see him throw. They got to see him run at his combine, at his pro day. They got to see the type of athlete he is. I think to your point, like, he's played a lot of football. And I think when you look at quarterbacks, you know, historically that have been successful, it's quarterbacks that have played a long time and have a pretty consistent approach over that time playing. So, like, you know, I think that's very, very valuable. You mentioned the pre-snap stuff. I think I'm 100% on board with that. And there's valued NFL systems and NFL coaches that see that skill set. They say, oh, we can maximize what this guy does, or we can maximize what we do. Excuse me. Like, I look at, you know, Minnesota and what they do with Justin Jefferson and some of the pre-snap stuff that they ask of the quarterback, and that's right in his wheelhouse. Now, post-snap, I don't think that's quite his forte necessarily, but I don't know what he was being asked to do up at UW. I've heard, you know, John Beck say that, you know, he works with him, and he's mentioned that he's been super impressed with how he handles stuff post-snap and some of the drill work that they do and some of the film work that they do. And so obviously John's been able to work more closely with him. And so maybe that's just what they were asking me to do at UW. But I do think there are a lot of physical tools. I think the experience is very valuable. And I think the film, you know, especially if you look at like that Texas game, for example, it's just very, very impressive. And there's games where you watch and say, man, this guy can make every throw. He can touch every level of the field. He wants to pass the football. He wants to be that point guard back there. And that's what you're looking for, you know, from the quarterback, from a mindset standpoint. Now, I think teams wish he would be a little bit more creative off schedule and kind of do some of the stuff you're seeing Patrick Mahomes, the Josh Allens, Joe Burrows do, and I think that's going to hurt him in terms of his evaluation. But in terms of arm talent and just mastery of throwing the football, like, I think that's why people are super – super excited about what he's been doing over the last couple of weeks.
Before we get to the other three, you know, he had these injuries back when he was at Indiana, hasn't had them at Washington. He's the oldest of these quarterbacks. Does that bother you at all, that position in the NFL, somebody who might be a year older than everybody else?
You know, not really. I think my concern is, like, you know, like, what is his developmental runway? You know, if he's going to be ready to go kind of year one, which I would assume he would be given his experience, I don't think it's a problem. I think, you know, my concern as a scout, as a GM, would be to get someone who can get the position, who can come in and execute the position, you know, for the first contract. Like, we can talk long-term contract stuff later, but I think it's just so hard to hit and get productive quarterback play even for 2 years from a young quarterback, right? You know, like, that, to me, it doesn't matter. Like, that long-term play doesn't matter. Like, yeah, you'll be in the rat race sooner again for a quarterback, but at least you'll have the opportunity to build around a talented guy, construct a roster around a guy on a rookie deal, that understands how to play the position. So for me, you know, I look at that five-year window, and a lot of teams are on the five-year window anyway. Because, like, you know, think about a lot of these quarterbacks, like the Josh Allens of the world. Like, one of the reasons you have to trade Stephon Diggs, you got to pay him after that rookie deal's up, and it totally changes the complexion of the roster. So you have to deal with your own adversities there anyway. So why not maximize that rookie contract with a guy you think can play the position?
Yeah, you know, one of the interesting things, and I've made this point recently, is of the four guys, all of them, five, all six of them, they've all played a lot of football. Like, there's no Trey Lance, you know, in this draft. There's no Anthony Richardson in this draft. They've all played plenty of football, you know, minimum of 2 years starting, if not more. Plenty of experience. And in the case of five out of the six of them, four out of the six for sure, Oregon's defense wasn't that bad. But take Michigan out of the equation, all of those quarterbacks had to carry their teams because defensively, I mean, LSU's defense was historically awful. Carolina's defense hasn't been good at all. And SC's defense was terrible. We actually have a quarterback draft in which, you know, there's plenty of tape and there's plenty of, hey, they had to strap the team to their back, with the exception really of McCarthy.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I think that's obviously helpful for the evaluation, you know, and I think even the stuff that McCarthy had to do, he had to carry his team in a different way. I think people have been talking a lot about his third, like the way he's performed on third down, the way he's performed back up, the way he's performed in the red zone. And I think the film supports that. Like, he had to make sure, like, when you're in a run first system, that your execution on third down has to be immaculate. You're in third and seven, you're in third and eight more than any other quarterback in this draft class, and he, I think, rose to that occasion multiple times. He carried the team. You, like you said, he wasn't tasked to do it in the same way those other guys were, but again, he had to do some really, really high level stuff for that offense. So I totally agree. I think the total package here is awesome. I think the one problem you run into across the board for every player except for J.J. McCarthy is this idea that there aren't that many NFL throws in college football anymore, which is really annoying and makes the evaluation tough. But I do think you have guys that have seen defenses, led offenses, had to make big-time throws, had to make big-time plays, and that's always great to see people playing the position in a competitive and explosive manner in every quarterback's case.
All right, give me more on J.J. McCarthy. What are your thoughts after evaluating him?
Yeah, you know, he's a guy that's interesting. You know, like, I was kind of up and down on him, I think probably because the throw volume was so low. Not probably, because the throw volume was so low. And I recently there was a cut-up that came out online of all of his throws, all of his runs, and all of his incompletions from the last season. And when you just get to watch him throw and operate from the pocket and the timing that he's operating with, the ball velocity that he's throwing with, the windows that he's throwing into, the anticipation that he's throwing with, it feels like you see more NFL throws from him than any other player in this draft class, which is crazy to say because he has the lowest throw volume of anybody in the draft class. But I think those types of plays get you really excited. You see him run quarterback power and outrun a corner for the first down. You see him kind of the catch he made in the game against Alabama was – in the Rose Bowl game was insane. Like, you see the athlete, and I'm a big guy. The more throws I watched, the more I was impressed with how he was able to spin the football. So I think he's a pretty talented athlete who understands how to perform in NFL style throwing windows and NFL style anticipation. And I think that's incredibly important part of why he's rising up draft boards and all of a sudden he's in the conversation as like a top 10 pick.
Drake May,
man, goodness me. He's a guy that I go back and forth on almost every day. Like, this is the best way I can explain him. He has the highest upside. He has the highest ceiling of anybody in this draft class. His ability to absolutely rip the ball over the middle of the field and push the football down the field, the confidence, the playmaking moxie that he has, his ability to create off schedule, his ability to scramble, it's very, very impressive. And it makes you say, wow, this is the guy of this group outside of Caleb Williams that's closest to, like, that Josh Allen playmaker, that Justin Herbert playmaker. And the throws are on the tape when you watch his big-time plays and his big-time throw cut-up. The problem is when you watch the film, when you watch the down-to-down production, there are these moments of inconsistency that are just nonsensical. Like, he'll skip a ball on an out route. He'll throw it 4 yards over the guy's head. And I think it's footwork and fundamental issues that I think could be corrected. Like, obviously, Josh Allen's corrected it. You know, Aaron Rodgers has corrected that issue. But it makes me very, very concerned about him coming in day one and starting. Again, like, the film is so fun to watch. Like, when the good stuff is amazing, the bad stuff is terrible. And so, like, some of his drop mechanics in the pocket, how he kind of floats into pressure. He doesn't move in the pocket to kind of avoid pressure. He's kind of a magnet to rushers sometimes. It's confounding to me. And that's the thing that I come back to is, like, when you watch the cut-ups, you're like, this guy is the guy. And then you watch the game, you're like, why did he miss this throw? Why is the ball placement like this on this big over the middle of the field? Why is this slant behind the guy? This would have been a touchdown if he was on the money. And just the inconsistency from that standpoint is something that just I cannot quantify. I cannot justify, because, again, my heart says this is the guy you want to take it to because the ceiling is so high. But I do think it's at least 8 games away in the NFL. And so can you insulate him? Can you sit him? Can you build a good defense and a rushing attack around him so he doesn't have to make those plays and can grow into that guy? I don't know. But, again, he's a really interesting, fun, and also frustrating evaluation for sure.
Should it prevent a team from taking a quarterback with the highest ceiling if he's the one out of all of them that is the least ready to play right away?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, man. I think I've gone back and forth on it all the time, every day, you know. I think for example, I think New England's a really interesting case study. And if I was them, I would jump at the opportunity, because I feel like they've cultivated a situation there with Jacoby Brissett where you say, hey, we are perfectly comfortable having Jacoby start for the year and letting you develop, letting you learn. If there's an injury, you can come in and play. Here in Washington, again, I think the staff probably feels different about Marcus Mariota. And I haven't talked to anybody about this, but, you know, I've heard Peter say they feel that if they needed to sit a guy, they could sit a guy. I don't know if I feel the same way about Marcus Mariota. And so I'd be a little bit reluctant. So I feel like they need to find a guy here that's a little bit more ready to start. But, yeah, man, that's the million-dollar question to me with these three guys. Because, like, you know, we'll talk about the other guys in a second, but that ceiling of Drake May is very intoxicating. It's just about, is he ever going to get there? And what is your plan as a staff? What is your development plan? What is your plan to insulate him? And what is the focus to make sure that he gets to that moment? And I think those are the million-dollar questions, not so much the talent. It's like, what systems do you have in place to make sure that he gets there?
You know, it's interesting on him. My feeling is that if that's the one they really believe in, even if he's the one that's not ready to go right away, who cares? You take him because it's not about this year or next year even. It's about really 2026 and beyond. But what's interesting about going in that direction, if it's true he's the least ready to go right away, is would you consider looking at a player like Terry McLaurin as an example and saying, Terry's got 2 years left on his deal. We're not going to contend in 2024. We're probably not going to contend for anything in 2025. That would be the first year Drake May would be the starting quarterback. And would we look to get value for him and say trade him to Buffalo for a second-round pick right now? I mean, I know how much everybody loves Terry and what a first-rate person he is and a culture setter, the whole thing. But, man, just for him to get someplace where he could actually play with a legitimate quarterback for the, you know, as he enters here the back half, really, at 29 years old, which he will be early in the season next year, the back half of his prime years.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely an interesting perspective. And, you know, if that's the plan for the retooling of this organization, I definitely would kick the tires on it. But I think, you know, If I'm heading the team, I want to make sure I've got enough playmakers around the quarterback, at least in the short term, to allow him to be successful. I think a lot of teams make the mistake of giving away, you know, talented football players, kind of hoping that this young player will elevate the roster.
Right.
But in the beginning, the roster needs to elevate the player. And so how good can we get this roster in the interim to make sure whoever's playing quarterback for this team over the next 3 or 4 years can grow and develop the way we need them to grow and develop.
Yeah, that's more of the hypothetical for May, if indeed May is the one that wouldn't play his rookie year, right? Because then you'd have Terry in his final year of his contract, which then it's very hard to get any value back for him. The other part of it is just that this seems to be, on paper, a phenomenal wide receiver draft. All right, let's get to Jaden Daniels. And we'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors. This segment of the show, as we continue with Logan Paulson, is brought to you by MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag, use my promo code KevinDC to qualify for a cash bonus on your initial deposit. Yeah, your first-time deposit, you'll get a cash bonus from MyBookie. They've got everything you need for the final four games, both women's tonight, men's tomorrow night. Also up right now are their NFL draft prop bets. Caleb Williams, a massive favorite to be the first overall pick in the draft. But the second overall pick right now, Jaden Daniels, the favorite at minus 170. All right, so you have to wager $170 to win $100. Drake May is plus 110. After that, J.J. McCarthy is all the way back at nearly 5-1 at plus 495. So those are the odds right now at MyBookie for the second overall pick, presumably to Washington. Jaden Daniels is the favorite there. MyBookie.ag, promo code KevinDC. We continue with Logan Paulson. Jaden Daniels, what do you think?
Yes, so Jaden Daniels is the guy that, I mean, I kind of came to this conclusion a couple of days ago, that if we had to start a guy tomorrow, he'd probably be my pick. And again, like, there are some elements of this LSU offense that I think are oversimplified. There's easy throws that don't require a lot of, like, mental gymnastics from the quarterback. But in the same breath, there are NFL throws in the offense. You see the box fade. You see the ball placement on the deep balls. He is throwing to two absolutely dynamic playmakers in Brian Thomas Jr. and Malik Nabers that are, you know, going to be top probably 20 picks, maybe top 15 picks, both of them together. And obviously, Malik Nabers would be a top 5 pick, I think. But I think you see a guy that has a very quick release. His fundamentals in the pocket are pretty locked in. And then I also think the ability to run the football there is going to regulate how defenses can play him. I think you'll probably see a lot more, you know, simple coverage structures because of the zone read, because of the scramble stuff. And I think that'll help his development early on. And I think from what I've heard, he's a tremendous worker. He's a guy that's not going to fail because he's a bad worker, from what I understand, to talk with people at the combine about him. So a guy that I maybe a little slightly underwhelmed with the arm talent, but again, hyper-quick release, great fundamentals, and the ability to run and make plays with your legs is a huge deal. And I know people kind of talk about the sack to pressure ratio. I think that's something you're going to have to deal with him as a runner, because he's trying to make plays. But also, I think sometimes in that LSU offense, you don't see a ton of opportunity for him to get the football out of his hand when the pressure is on. And, you know, I'm not there to hear what the coaching points are, but sometimes from a play design, I'm not putting him in the best place to be successful. So I think if I had to start someone tomorrow, it would be him. But again, like, I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here. He's a guy that had one really good year of college production. I think he was a good player prior to that, but became an excellent player in one season. And it makes you question his ability to do that long-term at the NFL level.
Yeah, I think it's important to point out that he had a great year. There's no doubt about it. But it's not like he wasn't good in the previous years. He had a great freshman year, really good freshman year at Arizona State. And his first year at LSU, they won some big games, and he was pretty good in those big games. I'm going to share with you probably to the extent of nauseating my audience, because they've heard me say it so many times, but you and I haven't talked in a while. I think the pressure to sack percentage number, first of all, came down a lot in 2023. But sure. I've suggested even to some of the PFF guys, not all sacks are the same. And if you look and you go through his sacks, a lot of them are him in dropback mode, escaping the pocket and running out of bounds a yard short of the line of scrimmage. That actually registers as a sack. His average yards per sack was like 4 yards, the fewest of any of them. And I just think a lot of times he actually wasn't it's not the sacks that we think of. You know, the pure drop back, he doesn't see the pressure, he takes a sack. It was more in line with, no, he extended that play. He kept a big play available, but ultimately, instead of taking a 7-yard sack, he took a 2-yard sack or a 3-yard sack. And I think there's some context to that. And the intermediate throw gripe from many is because he didn't have many intermediate throw opportunities. They had the fewest third downs of any team in the country this year. When do we see a lot of the intermediate throws? We see them on 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7. And they had, you know, 8 less fewer third downs than any team in Division I college football because they were so prolific on 1st and 2nd down. But I'll end it there. I think, you know, I had somebody accuse me of making every excuse for the Daniels flaws or analytics flaws. And it's not that. It's just that when I watched him, I didn't see him deal with pressure poorly. And I was wondering why that number was high. By the way, it's high for Drake May and Caleb Williams as well. Drake May had the same thing. Had a lot of off-schedule sacks where actually the potential for a big play he kept alive, but ultimately, you know, got hit a yard behind the line of scrimmage or 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage after extending a play. To me, that's a different sack than the sacks McCarthy took, which were, you know, 7, 8, 9-yard sacks when he took them, you know, more of the traditional sacks. But anyway, just...
No, I totally agree, and I think it's just so important to put context on those numbers, because I think a lot of people just spout them off as like, this is the reason he can't draft the guy. I think probably because of the shell shock of Sam Howell and how that wasn't able to evolve over the course of his career in the NFL. But I also think when you watch Sam Howell, like, that was a concerning element of his game in terms of seeing pressure, not feeling it very well, not making the correct movements in the pocket to escape. And like, to your point with Jaden Daniels, even Drake May to a certain extent, you don't see that kind of you don't see that lack of awareness. Now, do they need to be smarter about throwing the football away and all that kind of stuff? Yes. But I think overall, I think you say it is something to be aware of. I don't think it is concerning to the same level that it was with Sam Howell, just as an example, last year.
You know, the Sam Howell thing, and I know we talked about this many times during the season, I think it just ultimately comes down to, and this may be way oversimplifying it, because I don't think he was a very good processor either, but he was 6'1" and played 6'1" or smaller. He was a croucher, you know, in the pocket. I just think a lot of times, the same thing at Carolina, he struggled to see it, whereas Daniels and May aren't going to have that problem at nearly 6'4".
No, I totally agree, and I think you see that. You see when you watch Drake May play, they can see the field better. I think that speaks to why he throws the ball so well over the middle of the field. And so, again, like, that's one of the things you feel good about with, I think, all of these quarterbacks. I think maybe Bo Nix is a little bit on the shorter side, but all of them seem to be able to kind of navigate the height of their offensive line well in terms of seeing the football field. Now, we talked about how Penix wasn't asked to throw the ball over the middle of the field very much. Same thing with Jaden Daniels. But, again, I think that was more of a stylistic decision by the offensive coordinator. Now, you could say, is that because they don't throw those balls well? Maybe, but that's a conversation you have to have with the staff there. But I do think that the stature of these guys is also very encouraging. I know some people say Jaden Daniels is on the small side, and he is from a weight standpoint, but the height I don't think would be a concern.
All right. Last one. You're the GM because you know this organization. You know what they have now coaching staff-wise. You're familiar with Cliff Kingsbury and maybe even to a certain extent what he's thinking about in terms of the offense that he'd like to put into place. You are the general manager. You're on the clock at number 2. Caleb Williams has just gone to Chicago. Who do you take?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the million-dollar question, and that's why if I'm the GM, I'm making sure I have Dan Quinn in my office, I have Cliff in the office, I have the offensive line coach even in the office, and we're going to chat through this, not probably on draft night, but throughout the process, just to be saying, like, who do we want to kind of designate our offensive vision, because I really think there's pros and cons to all these players. It just comes down to who as a staff do you like the most and who do you think you can develop? Because really, like, as much as we talk about Jaden Daniels being the most quote-unquote pro-ready and J.J. probably being second and Drake May being third, if you have a confidence that you can get Drake May there, I'm gonna be like, that's the pick. That's the guy. I want you guys as a staff to be invested in this player at the highest possible level, and I want you to take ownership over this selection, because ultimately you are the ones responsible for getting him to being a starting caliber franchise-leading quarterback. So now, that being said, I think I've kind of made my stance on this very clear. Like, I think Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy are much more ready to start today. So if I had a gun to my head and said, you got to win some games this year, we got to win 9 games this year, I'm probably drafting Jaden Daniels. If we have a long-term runway, I'm probably going to take Drake May and say, hey, this guy has the ceiling, the upside, the tools. Now, it's our job to get him there. But like I said, they all have developmental elements. The offense needs to be cultivated to maximize their skill set. So it's a very complicated question. But I think any one of those three with the support of the staff I would be fine with it. But I would need to hear why the staff felt that they could get that player to ultimately be a starting caliber NFL quarterback.
I would hope there's no pressure to win 8 or 9 games in 2024. That's really not the way to go about this. This is a long-term play. I know that the NFL doesn't have 5-year rebuilds or even 3-year rebuilds, but I would hope if a guy's just maybe a year behind the others, but they believe will ultimately be the best, that that's the way they'd go with the guy that they ultimately think will be the best.
No, I think that's exactly right. But you know, like coaches are and staffs are, there's all this turnover. I agree. I don't think it should be that way, but if there is a little bit of heat and you want to kind of get the rebuild started ahead of time. And again, like I said, I think Jaden Daniels is a tremendous football player. I think he's going to be a better football player sooner than Drake May. But I do think the ceiling is much higher for Drake May. You know, and I think that's something that needs to be considered. And again, like, if you believe that Jaden Daniels not only elevates the offense from a pass game standpoint, but as a runner, and you can keep him healthy, and you can be innovative in that way, like much like Philly was with Jalen Hurts, I think there's a lot there to be excited about. And again, you have 5 years with this young player and a lot of money at your disposal to get this roster where it needs to go. So I think as long as the ecosystem around him is correct and as long as you can support that development, I think you feel good, again, about all three of those guys. It's just about, to me, and I think this is the most important thing, who the staff believes is that guy and the staff can take ownership of and say, this is the guy we want to grow and make sure that he's the start, the face of the franchise moving forward for the Washington Commanders.
You've said something a couple of times that I just want to follow up on real quickly. When you've talked about Jaden Daniels, some dual threat nature, and you even comped it to Jalen Hurts. Do you have to have that for him?
That's a great question. I think so. I think that needs to be part of what you're doing. I think just because of, I think it's too hard otherwise. You know what I mean? I think one of the hurdles that Drake May is going to have to overcome, and even J.J. McCarthy, but all these guys are going to have to overcome, is the complexity of NFL defenses. And I think when you look at Michigan versus UW, for example, like how they were able to kind of totally befuddle Michael Penix Jr., I think that's a perfect illustration of that. And as the complexity of the defense increased, you saw the struggles that Drake May had. And then you watch, you know, Jaden Daniels versus Alabama, for example, and they run that Michigan defense where they've kind of got this man-match principle. There's some cover three. There's some, you know, different rotational looks with multiple safeties on the field, that three safety look that a lot of NFL teams are pushing towards. And one of the things he's able to do is regulate what you do with his legs. Now, you know, obviously, like, a lot of that in that game comes off of his scrambles, but I think having that as a feature of what you do offensively is paramount, just because it simplifies the picture for the quarterback. And so by him running the football and you taking advantage of that skill set, it makes it easier for him to throw the football. And I think that is something that, again, is one of the reasons why I do believe he's going to be more successful earlier, given the right offensive system, because of what that running ability from that position does to regulate defenses.
All right. You've said that, you know, long term, in terms of the guy you feel the best about long term, is Drake May, but, you know, very subtle differences between all of them. And if you need to win now, it's, you know, it's more Daniels. What, last question, what do you think they'll do? Like, what do you think they'll come to the conclusion on? Best fit for Cliff, Quinn, the organization. By the way, a lot of what doesn't get talked about in terms of this pick is, you know, this is going to become the face of the franchise in this new era of a new ownership group. You know, I think the football should drive the conversation rather than the face of the franchise. But what do you think they'll do?
I mean, I think that's the $1 million question, because definitely.
Well, there are $2 million questions now.
Yeah, we're big money questions.
Yeah.
And so there's something else I want to bring up here, and I'm gonna kind of skate your question for a second. Is the JJ McCarthy thing, and I do think that there is value to the fact that he was part of a winner, and that he made a winner, and he knows what that looks like, and he's got the mindset for that. So I do think there's a lot of value there. Watching him at the combine, at the presser, like, dude commands the room. He's charismatic, and guys on his team love him. So I do think there's value there. So honestly, I do not have a good answer. I have no idea what they're going to do. Because I think, like I've talked about, I definitely see there are compelling arguments and compelling shortcomings to all three of those guys. And I really have no idea. I think I'd probably say Jaden Daniels, just because I do think that dynamic runner is at the quarterback position is the ultimate equalizer for offenses, especially with defenses becoming as complex as they are. But how much do you actually want to run him given his small frame? I think JJ McCarthy, that leadership, that ability to sling the football, those NFL throws on tape, he's also a pretty dynamic runner. Like, does that add value, or do you want to hit the home run with Drake May and say, hey man, like, we're going to take our lumps with this, but 4 years from now, he's going to be one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. His ability to create off schedule, his ability to just absolutely rip the football with that gunslinger mentality is value there. And again, like, I wish I could say it was one of these, but I definitely see that they're in the same tier for me for a reason. So if they took one of these three guys, I'd be like, makes sense to me. Now it's just about getting him where he needs to be to make sure he's the face of the franchise moving forward.
Logan_Paulson82 on Instagram. He does a podcast with Craig Hoffman called Take Command. You can get that anywhere you get a podcast. He does all the work on the Washington Commanders website and on their YouTube channel. And he played a little football during the course of his career with some really smart coaches. And he's smart as well. Appreciate the insight as always.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate having me on, man. Always have a blast.
Logan Paulson's really good at analyzing football. I know many of you enjoy when he's on the show, and I enjoy having him on the show. That is it for the show today. Enjoy the basketball over the weekend. I'll be back on Monday.